Done with frizz? Say goodbye to that poof. Repel humidity and tame those flyaways. One drop, frizz stops with John Frieda Frizzy Serum. Your hair talks and frizz never interrupts. John Frieda Frizzy Serum. One drop, frizz stops.
Only from John Frieda.
Want to make your blonde blonde? Sheer Blonde Go Blonder Collection by John Frieda lightens and brightens hair two full shades to give you your best blonde every day. Your hair talks. Make a statement with Sheer Blonde Go Blonder Collection. Only from John Frieda.
We got to look in the mirror, man. We got to, you know, get out of our own way in a sense that I think we're getting too many mental blocks from too many guys at the same time. Whatever it may be that is affecting a guy in one play, we have to get past it. We have to move forward. We have to just continually thinking about the big picture, think about the team and not yourself, not, you know, because you missed a few shots or turned it over or having a bad night, whatever it is. You got to get out of that funk. You got to find a way to contribute, and that's what we all have to do as a unit.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Friday edition of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Peter Edmiston. Happy to be with you. And I decided to start the podcast with the words of Mike Conley after the Wizards game on Wednesday night, because I felt like it kind of summed up some of the things we're going to talk about on today's podcast, namely, you know, what's going on with the Grizzlies? Who are they? Yeah, I wrote about this for the commercial appeal. It'll be in print today if you happen to be in the Memphis area, and it's online at the commercial appeal website. If you haven't checked it out, so I'm going to be referring to some of the things that I've wrote, some of the numbers in there. So you want to check that out, and that would be a good resource while we talk about all of this. Also, a reminder, too, if you want to interact with the pod, I'd love to get your interaction. I'd love to hear from you. You can hit me up on Twitter. I am at Peter Edmiston. I've just started a new Facebook page, so facebook.com/LockedOnGrizzlies, or just search for Locked On Grizzlies from your Facebook page. Please like it. I always hate the way that sounds. Please like me. But it would be good to get that and to get that interaction. And please leave messages. I will post every show there, and if you want to leave comments underneath, I'll get to those and check those out. And it's a great way to get in touch. Email peter@peteredmiston.com. All that, any of that stuff, I just love to hear from you. So it's really, really cool that you guys interact, and I appreciate that very much. So please keep those coming in. As I mentioned, we're going to talk about the Grizzlies' kind of uncertain situation right now, and we're also going to do a little 3Q preview of the Sacramento Kings, a team that has been really hit hard by the torn Achilles of Rudy Gay, a guy that, you know, he wasn't terribly happy in Sacramento, but as the Grizzlies can tell you, when you lose a player to a torn Achilles, as they did with Mario Chalmers last year, it is a psychologically tough thing for your teammates to deal with, because everyone knows how devastating that injury is and how tough it is to come back from. It's a long, long process. So I would imagine this is going to be a Kings team that is mentally nowhere near their best. Another return for Dave Yeager. I think the bloom is off that rose a little bit there. That was a bit of a story when he came initially a few weeks ago, but the second time around, not an especially big deal. So we'll talk about all of that. But let's start with some news. And All-Star starters have been named and announced, and not among them, Mark Gasol and Mike Conley. I don't think anyone really expected that Mike Conley was going to be part of that group. But Mark Gasol, yeah, had a bit of a chance, possibly, to get there, but he did not make it. And some of the starting and the way this thing was selected is a little bit unusual, or folks are finding it a little bit unusual, I suppose, especially that Russell Westbrook is not a starter over Steph Curry. But again, you know, this comes back to a tiebreak situation between the fan voting, the media voting, and player voting. Westbrook ended up tied with Curry and Harden, but Westbrook was behind them in the fan voting, which was the tiebreaker. So it ends up that Curry and Harden are the starting guards. I mean, Westbrook's going to be, it really doesn't matter. There's no chance he's missing the All-Star game anyway. I would say the same is true of Marc Gasol. I feel like he's going to be an all-star as a reserve, and it doesn't really matter because, you know, at the end of the day, when your resume is announced and when they look at you, they don't say you're a 10-time all-star with a 5-time starter. It just means, you know, you get the cool starting intro thing when they do the all-star game stuff. You get all that, and, you know, that's pretty much what you got. It doesn't really change anything about you being an all-star. So that's not a big deal to me. So it's Curry and Harden are the starters for the Western Conference. Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, and Anthony Davis are the front court players, not Marc Gasol over in the East. Kyrie Irving, LeBron James, Jimmy Butler, Giannis, Antetokounmpo, and DeMar DeRozan. DeRozan, the controversial one over on the East side, as he won the tiebreak that was the fan vote over Isaiah Thomas of the Celtics, and there's some controversy about that. I mean, you know, Isaiah Thomas, he killed the Grizzlies, you will no doubt recall, and he's having a phenomenal year. But DeRozan is too, and I don't think, you know, there's no chance that Thomas is going to miss out. So the same thing that is applying to Russell Westbrook in his 20 triple doubles applies to Isaiah Thomas in his 28 point scoring average at his size. He will be an all-star without a doubt. The new format with 50% fan voting, 25% media and players, I think ended up helping out because it kept Zaza Pachulia from being a starter, thank God. And it kind of helped to even out, you know, some of the rougher edges. Now, you know, you saw Tony Allen's ballot, and we highlighted it here on the show. He clearly didn't take it terribly seriously. A lot of guys didn't take it terribly seriously, but many did. And many had some of the Warriors, you know, way down on their lists compared to what the fans and media had. The players had Klay Thompson 8th, for example. Fans and media had him 4th. Which was interesting. Andre Iguodala was like 22nd, I think. So maybe a little anti-Warrior player bias coming in. But it could be just that the players are screwing around, just like Tony did. And I have no idea. I think these votes are always ripe for being skewed. There's always somebody's best interests involved, whether you're a fan, you want to see your team, or whether you're a player, you want to see your teammate or yourself. There's always something, media even. There's always biases involved, so there's never going to be any perfect system. I think this is probably, it's certainly better than just pure fan voting, in my opinion, but it's not a big, and I'm not one of these people that gets real bent out of shape about this sort of thing. Some people get really, really upset if their guy isn't starting or isn't, you know, getting the respect or blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. I think generally it all works itself out. Also tough news. You know, speaking of injuries, we talked about Rudy Gay's injury. Another tough one in the Western Conference for the Spurs and Marc Gasol's brother, former Grizzly great Pau Gasol, out indefinitely after fracturing the 4th metacarpal on his left hand. It was a similar injury to Jonas Valanciunas, who of the Raptors, who had it last year, and he missed around 20 games or so. So that would put Pau out until March. And that is a factor, without a doubt, for the Spurs. Now, they won last night against the Nuggets, 118-104 without him. I mean, Greg Popovich getting ejected in that game. But that is still a blow and a dent to them and a boon to the Warriors and maybe to the Rockets. And it may knock the Spurs down towards that third spot. I don't think they're going to slide down into the fourth area, but it's Powell's been good. He's been good, and then their defense and all the things that you worry about, he's not the best defender, but they've made it work with him and Tony Parker and Kawhi is an all-star, and LaMarcus Aldridge is really, really good. So they're still fine. I'm not too worried about them, but that is a blow for the Spurs. Now, let's talk a little bit about the Grizzlies. So going back to those words that you heard from Mike Conley, after the Washington game, those do not sound like typical post-game words or the kind of stuff that Mike Conley especially says. It doesn't sound like he's just referring to that game. He's talking about, you know, the season. Guys have got to look in the mirror. Guys have got to figure out what's going on. That kind of stuff. you couple that with a quote from Tony Allen that was not, I don't know if there's any audio of the quote, but I do know that it was recorded somewhere and written down by the, I think by the Wizards staff and put out on the quote sheet. And it was, to me, this one really got me thinking. Here's what he said after the game. He was asked about Otto Porter, who, you know, of course had a huge game, particularly in the first quarter against the Grizzlies on Wednesday. Here's what Tony's quote was: "That made them a lot dangerous. I didn't even know he was on the scouting report today. I didn't hear two words about him today in the shoot around. It was just a lot about Beal and Wall. Like I said, we got to pay better attention to our opponents and have a little better focus coming into games. You let guys, the others, when the others, guys like him, Morris, you let those guys be highlights of the day, there's going to be pressure on your defense." Now that's the quote from Tony. "I didn't even know he was on the scouting report today. I didn't hear two words about him today in the shoot-around." You know, now there's really two possible explanations here, neither of which is particularly good. You have explanation number one, which is that Tony Allen is right that they didn't talk about Otto Porter or Markieff Morris or anyone other than Beal and Wall, at least from Tony's perspective. He wasn't asked, and he didn't cover those guys, so he wasn't given a scouting report with those guys. That's possible. And Tony has said before that, you know, he gets very focused on one guy. I've talked to Tony Allen on a number of occasions about this, and he really does. He focuses in on the guy or guys that he really expects to guard and gets, like, granular with what they do. He goes and watches every one of their possessions. I think he said the last five games, and or maybe the last 10 games, to get a feel for what they're doing now, what they can do, what they can't do, and then he looks at the numbers. And, you know, he's very, you know, more so than his reputation would let on, he's very analytical when it comes to that kind of stuff. So if they weren't given to him, it's possible that Porter wasn't his guy and he didn't think that he'd have to cover him, so he wasn't discussed. But I don't know. That's one explanation. So maybe that's the case. If that's the case, then obviously that's a major problem for the coaching staff and for the preparation for the game. But this is not the first time that a guy that is unheralded, although Otto Porter's having a great year. I mean, you know, he's their third leading scorer. He's a 45% three-point shooter. You know, he's a guy that so many people wrote off very early as a bust, and he has turned into a heck of a good player for the Wizards. But this is not the first time that the Grizzlies have been torched by a guy that isn't as well-known. Hell, it's not the first time this week that it's happened. Doug McDermott killed the Grizzlies. He probably wasn't all over the scouting report either. You know, you can go back to so many guys. Austin Rivers torched the Grizzlies. You know, there are guys up and down rosters in the NBA who have been not terribly widely thought of and well-known, who have destroyed the Grizzlies. So option number two, and what I'm leaning towards, is that it's just a thing that is endemic to this particular team, that they just don't maintain a high level of focus all the time. When they do focus, they're terrific, but they don't maintain that high level of focus. And that takes me to the article I wrote today for the Commercial Appeal, in which I discussed a lot of different thoughts about how things have changed and how the team is such a different group. You know, some of the numbers we discussed yesterday on the pod, you know, just the fact that it's gone from an all defense little offense team to an all offense little defense team in just the span of a month. You know, that's not really a healthy way to go. But I dug in a little deeper for that and to look at the effect in particular of Chandler Parsons and Marc Gasol. Also, a little look at Troy Daniels' numbers and why he's not playing. So check that out if you want to get all the ins and outs of it. But to give you the nitty gritty on Chandler, for example, I do think that's definitely a factor. You know, there you cannot discount the fact that Parsons especially since his return from the bone bruise, that was on December 21st. You know, so that's right around that Christmas time line of demarcation that I've used just as an example of where this thing has gone. His return, when he's played, you know, he's actually on a stricter minutes restriction since the return from the bone bruise than he was in the six games that he played prior to that. He averaged about 20 minutes in those games. Since he's been back, he's not cracked, you know, mostly not 15, and now recently not more than 19 minutes in any game. So in first halves, when Chandler Parsons plays, and these numbers come from NBA Wowie, great site. The Grizzlies, when he plays in all first halves since, you know, he began, so take all the season games into it, when he plays, the Grizzlies have a net rating of minus 9.6. So they're 9.6 points per 100 possessions worse off when Parsons plays in those first halves. When he doesn't play, they are a minus 1.3, with most of the improvement coming on the defensive end in terms of the rating. Now, when you isolate that into just the games since his return from the bone bruise, and that's actually the majority of the games, the majority of the minutes, but if you take out that first little stretch when he came back briefly and then, you know, had to sit out again, take that stretch out just since December 21st and his return for the bone bruise, the numbers are jarring. He when he plays in first halves, the Grizzlies have a net rating of minus 19.7. So nearly 20 points per 100 possessions worse in first halves when he plays. When he's not on the court, that jumps to a plus 3.1. So the Grizzlies are 3.1 points per 100 possessions better when he doesn't play in those first halves of games. That's a 23-point difference, basically, when he plays, when he doesn't play. That's huge. That is enormous. And it speaks to the difficulty that they have in incorporating Parsons in, but also because of the improvement, it's really improvement on both sides. I mean, the offensive rating jumps 13.5 points. The defensive rating falls by just under 10 points. So it's a huge difference on both sides of it. And, you know, it just tells you that it's not working with that group. It's not working. Now, long term, clearly the idea is that he would start, he would mix in with the starting unit, that he would be part of that core group. Obviously, you're paying him that kind of money, that's what's going to happen. But in the short term, as he continues to be very gently eased back into action with a very cautious approach as it pertains to the minutes. I mean, very, very cautious. Understandably so. The you know, a lot of money invested, two knee surgeries, et cetera, et cetera. But it's super cautious. Well, as he's being eased in, why not shift those minutes around a little bit? You know, just him playing in these first quarters and playing with the starters and being a starter, that's not working. It's not working right now. Now, maybe down the line it will when he's a little more mobile or when things are a little more settled with the starters or whatever. But right now it's not. Why not shift those minutes to the second quarter and have him come in off the bench to a bench unit that sometimes needs a little outside shooting and certainly could use some playmaking because of the state of the backup point guard situation, which I didn't get a chance. That was on the cutting room floor. I didn't get a chance to fully flesh that out in the story, but that's another problem the Grizzlies face. So you don't have the playmaking that you would normally have. So why not throw Parsons in there? He's certainly a very good playmaker. That would make a lot of sense. So can you shift those minutes around? I don't know, but I think it's worth thinking about. And it's worth wondering if he's ever going to improve these kinds of numbers and become more fluid with this group while he's on the restriction. You know, can you actually bump that up and remain on that limited restriction? Can you do that? I don't know. That seems to me like a very big challenge. He had, you know, a little flash when initially his minutes were all moved to the first half. He had a little flash where it kind of got better, and he looked okay. Like, this guy looks like he's gonna get it going. You know, Golden State, he was putting up some numbers. you know, and you think, okay, all right, the Utah game looked pretty good. Yes, all right, this is happening, and it's trailed off. That was a false dawn, it would appear, because certainly in the last two games, at least, it was right back to where things started, particularly on the defensive end, where he was really struggling. They have to resolve the Chandler Parsons situation if they're going to find some consistency. That's first and foremost. Then you have the situation with Marc Gasol, whose numbers continue to be, you know, really baffling. It's just, I mean, since Christmas, he is the, like, and it's not even close, the guy who has the biggest impact from a positive side when he sits on the bench. The Grizzlies are 22 points per 100 possessions better with Gasol on the bench than on the court since Christmas. We've talked a little bit about this, particularly with the pair of Conley and Gasol. And, you know, you thought maybe it would kind of get a little better, and it started to get a little better. It looked like maybe it was improving, but it hasn't, truthfully, really gotten that much better. If anything, there was another step back on Wednesday night defensively for Mark. And that's the crazy thing, that it's defensively where Mark is really costing the Grizzlies statistically. You know, Mike Conley is not great in that number. The Grizzlies are 15.5 points per 100 possessions better with Conley on the bench, and that's without a real recognized true backup point guard. If the Grizzlies actually had a good backup point guard, that number might explode because Conley has struggled as well. You know, we've already discussed that a little bit. Chandler Parsons, his effect is actually not as big. It's only 6 points better when he's on the bench over the last 12 games, so the game since Christmas. So it's a strange one to see, but nonetheless, it's still an amazing kind of stat to really take into consideration. You know, how is that possible? You know, how is that possible with Mark? I mean, you can look and you can figure out all kinds of different things, and you could, you know, you could poke around all kinds of theories and stuff, but like, there's just not much concrete that you can really hold on to. I looked at the synergy numbers, and you know, you watch the in the eye test. He still looks like he's spry out there. He looks like he's moving pretty well. You know, he's jumping. He's doing that stuff. He doesn't look especially labored. I mean, he's played more minutes the last couple games. His minutes have been right around 40. That's probably too many for Mark, and that may cause the struggle. You know, the Grizzlies are definitely slower with him on the floor than without, but it's not a huge difference in that regard. I don't know. I think part of it has to do with the fact that his offense has started to wane a little bit. The versatility of his offense, at least. You know, Mark, that the 3-point explosion that started the season off has faded, and Mark is now, it was 8 of his last 35 from 3. He's only hit a 3 in 4 of his last 13 games at all. So he's been 0-for. For a lot of those, the attempts have gone down a little bit too. And it seems like, you know, the commitment to that is getting lost in the shuffle. Now, that hasn't affected the Grizzlies. And in fact, it's been, you know, the Grizzlies as a whole have been positive on the offensive side, but it's been a little bit different and a little more traditional in that sense, at least with regard to Mark. You know, Mark's gotten his points at the free throw line. He's gotten his points in the post. He's gotten his points in those ways, not as much from the threes as we saw earlier in the season. The one area that I did highlight in the piece, and one that has been discussed a lot, and you guys have certainly sent me plenty of messages and emails and all that on this particular issue, but it's the one of Marc Gasol and his rebounding. And so I dug into those numbers a little bit from rebounding, and there's definitely a concern there. You know, Mark, you know, David Fizdale has said that he expects more from Mark rebounding-wise, but Mark's rebounding has gone down continuously for years. It's just trending in that direction, has been for a while. He gets just 38% of the offensive rebounds he has a chance to, according to NBA.com. You know, that's where you are in position to get a rebound and you could possibly do it, and you don't. You know, that is as they see it via the tracking information that they use. That number was 60%. He got 60% just two seasons ago on the offensive glass. Now that's down to 38. And that tells you that, you know, he is not dialed in the same way that he was earlier in his career. Now, some of that is also that positionally, he's just not where he was. That's definitely true. You know, if you see that he's going to be out further and further back when it comes to, you know, his positioning, because he's shooting more threes and he's kind of more of an outside oriented big, well, then, you know, he's not going to have as many opportunities for the offensive rebound. And indeed, the actual length, the average length of his offensive rebound is 8 feet from the basket, which is third longest among all centers in the league, and almost tops. I think it was Karl-Anthony Towns that was slightly higher. The only one that played, there was one other guy that was higher, but it was was not anyone that played. It was a deep bench player. I forget who it was, but it was. So really, in actuality, it's more like he's second in that. That just tells you where he is positionally. You know, that number was more like 5.5 feet 2 years ago. That tells you the difference in the offense. That does affect the offensive rebounding for sure from Mark, but that's a factor. That's definitely part of it. What is also part of it is that Mark, on the defensive rebounding side, that's really where the struggles have begun major. You know, he gets just 56% of the defensive rebounds that he has a chance to. That's down 10% from two seasons ago, 4% from last year. He's deferring. Now, they do measure when you defer the rebound, when you could get it and you let your teammate get it. So he's deferring more of those than in seasons past. That helps. But when he's on the floor, the Grizzlies grab 8 fewer defensive rebounds per 100 possessions and almost 11% fewer possible rebounds overall when he's on the floor than when he's not. And that certainly is a factor in teams. If you get fewer defensive rebounds, that means teams are getting more offensive rebounds. And that leads to typically pretty good looks. You know, offensive rebounds, not in every case, but in many cases, you get an offensive rebound, you get a putback, you get a good look at it. That helps. And if you are going to have a problem with that, then that's going to lead to some defensive issues. That could be part of it. I don't know if that's the explanation in full. I do think that, like you saw the game against Washington, I think inside Mark is not defending at the rim with as much force. I still think he can. I just don't think he is. I think some of the scheme stuff he's not necessarily wild about, so that may mentally be part of it too. But it's just a big number when you see how much over a lot of minutes. We're talking, you know, we're in now 400 plus minutes. So, you know, enough time to really be somewhat telling. By no means a full season or even half a season, but enough to give you a little indication here that when the numbers are that bad for your guy that, you know, is probably going to be an all-star, it's really strange. I can't imagine. I haven't looked around the league, but I can't imagine there's too many teams that have an all-star candidate doing that to their groupings. I can't imagine that that's the case. So it makes for a very confusing situation for Grizzly fans. And then, of course, the confusion of Troy Daniels. And when David Fizdale, you know, specifically says after the Houston game a week ago, he says, you know, I've got to get Troy Daniels on the court. And then 5 days later, he doesn't get on the court, even though they've had ample opportunity to do so. It just means that there's got to be some kind of reason, you know, David Fizdale's got that is beyond my explanation or beyond logic. Because the Grizzlies, I mean, in that fourth quarter against Washington, we talked about it. They didn't hit a field goal in the first 7 minutes of the quarter. Yeah, you needed offense. People say, well, Troy's not that great of a defender. That's fair. He's not. But who's defending well? The Grizzlies are 19th defensive rating in the last 3 weeks. No one's defending especially well. So what are you holding them back for? That's the one I don't get. I think all of it points ultimately to a hard truth. And I'm gonna keep it real here. For those of you that are listening, I like to shoot straight with you guys. I'm keeping it on this podcast. I keep it as real as I can. I say what I mean. And I just think at the end of the day, this group, this core group, they lack that true leadership presence in the locker room consistently. You know, they've got guys that are potential leaders. They've got guys that are terrific players, terrific people. I mean, there's no question about that. Mike Conley is an unbelievable guy. I mean, great guy. Pleasure to talk to. Does so much for the community. Great player. All that stuff. Not a fiery leader. Not a get in your face and get after it. Marc Gasol, same thing. Super talent. Great community guy. All those things. Wonderful teammate. Dear friend to a lot of those guys in that locker room. Not a, you know, go get him leader guy. In fact, he's historically been somewhat negative with his team. And he's trying to fix that, but that's a tough thing to fix. You know, Tony Allen, Zach Randolph, the other two members of the core four, both extremely tough, extremely hard-nosed, real tough guys in a league full of fake tough guys. These are real tough guys, not necessarily leaders in the sense that you're talking about with a locker room where a guy takes over and, you know, gives a big speech. And that's not them. And so this same group, they've required leadership from the coach. And it's what Lionel Hollins, you know, the one thing that he recognized about that group is that they needed to be, you know, they needed to have a little kick in the ass every now and then. That's what he recognized, and that's what he gave them. And sometimes it was too much. You know, it frayed his relationship with Zach Randolph. You know, it wasn't ideal. You know, he was really tough on Mike Conley. Those things were, you know, sometimes you take it too far. But he got the most consistency out of that group, more so than Dave Yeager and more so than David Fizdale. It's just, and I don't know what else Fizdale can do. And I think you heard Mike Conley talk about it. Yeah, he recognizes it. There's not, I mean, the coach, this is not dependent on the coach per se. If this were only happening now and it hadn't happened in years past, then you could say, absolutely, it's something Fizdale's doing. But that's not the case. This has been an ongoing thing for 3 or 4 seasons. So that means, you know, you look at what has been consistent in those seasons, and it's the core four. You know, those guys have tremendous loyalty, and understandably so, to each other, to the city, the city back to them, all of that. And they've given great memories and tremendous performances on the basketball court for years. But they don't have that consistent alpha presence that keeps things kind of on the straight and narrow when times get a little bit tough. They kind of wobble more than you would expect, and they usually end up finding their way, but that's where we're at. So, I mean, if you're asking me, that those things all kind of come together. There are some basketball explanations for it. There are some, you know, leadership stuff. I just think all of that is where we're at. And, you know, so can that be fixed or changed? I don't know. I don't think that it can. I mean, this is the way they are. And this is the way they have been for years. And these guys are all adults now. You know, back when, and not to say they were kids 4 or 5 years ago, but, you know, they were different. And many of them, Mike wasn't married. You know, Mark was either just getting married or hadn't been married yet. They weren't fathers, many of them. You know, Zach was, Tony was, but Mark and Mike weren't. You know, you just didn't, they were in different places in their lives. Now they're all over 30. or right there in the case of Mike Conley. You know, they've gone to a different phase of their lives, I think, and I just don't think the same kind of father figure type leadership is there. And I'm not sure that it would work. You know, if you were to bring Lionel back as he was 4 or 5 years ago, plop him right in the same situation, have him use the same method, I don't know that it would be effective. I don't know that it would work. They've all changed. But I do know that that's the one consistent thing is those guys. And, you know, if they're going to get this fixed and they're going to find that consistency and get themselves back to playing at their best, then it's going to have to be from within. It's going to have to be them doing it and them coming to that conclusion. Will that happen? I guess we'll find out starting tonight. Quickly into the 3Q preview for tonight's matchup with the Sacramento Kings. Kings come in and, you know, they're struggling. They're not very good. They're one of the many very good teams, or one of the many not very good teams, I should say, that are fighting for that eighth playoff spot in the Western Conference. The bottom of the West is, it's embarrassing that they're fighting for this playoff spot. None of these teams deserve to be in the playoffs, but one of them is going to be. It could be the Kings. Who knows? Question number one, what kind of Kings team will the Grizzlies see? And, you know, this is in reference, we talked about it earlier, Rudy Gay going down with a torn Achilles. That was confirmed on Thursday. So, you know, he's out for a long, long time. He's got a player option next year in his contract then that he will, I'm sure, exercise now. He wouldn't have, you know, he was going to make himself a free agent going into this offseason and would have, he stood to make a heck of a lot of money, more than he's going to make on his opt-in. Now, I mean, at least he's got that as a downside guarantee, which is nice. It's better that than nothing. But, you know, devastating financial blow for him, devastating, you know, just physical blow. It's tough, man. It's tough to come back from an Achilles. And so that tends to have an effect on the rest of the team. Will this Kings team be, will they be psychologically hurt? Will they feel back against the wall? Will they be inspired? You know, you never know the Kings, but they came into FedEx Forum earlier and beat the Grizzlies, you know, in the game that Mike Conley came back, his first game back after the back fracture, and he did not look particularly good in that ball game. And so, you know, this is a different Grizzly team in a different spot, but a team, in, as we've discussed, they desperately need a win. They don't care, you know, no knock on Rudy or anybody else. They don't care. The Grizzlies don't care. They need a win desperately. So anything will do. Any port in a storm, they need to find some level of success and get back to winning ways ASAP. Question number two, what will the Grizzlies do with Chandler Parsons? You know, that's the question to me that is going to define whether they can get off to good starts, whether they can, you know, be more flexible. Why they want to be locked into just having Chandler start. Yeah, I know that they want to develop some chemistry with that starting unit, but if it's not working, then try something different. You know, move Ennis back into the starting lineup where it seemed to work very well with him in that grouping. Troy Daniels, you know, give him an opportunity. Whatever it may be, you've got wings that you could slide in there, and then bring Chandler Parsons in and have his 15 to 20 minutes come in with more bench units, because they typically will need more playmaking, and that's an opportunity there. What will they do? Will it be the same thing that has not been working, or will they try to do something different, or maybe you go with the same thing and maybe it does work for the first time? You know, there have been one or two games where it has worked, so maybe that will be the case. Maybe this is the start of something better. I don't know, but I think I just personally feel like something needs to change. And then number three, can Fizdale find a minute or two for Troy Daniels? Just a minute or two. Just something. I mean, better than the DNP CD against Washington. You can't have that. That can't be a thing that continues. This dude, he's your best on-off player in the last month and a half. You know, he's the best. I mean, you look at the net rating, you look at the pure plus minus, you look at all the whatever metric you look at, generally speaking, the Grizzlies have been better with Troy Daniels on the floor than off the floor. That doesn't mean you play him 48 minutes or anything, but it does mean you play him more than zero. So you got to find a minute. 2 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. You got to find those minutes that you said that you were going to, if you're David Fizdale and you said a week ago that you needed to. You got to find those minutes for Troy Daniels, and you got to find them tonight. He still provides the best shooting threat of anybody on the team. He still gives you that pure, like, crazy hot scoring thing that very few Grizzlies have ever been able to do. And Mike Miller may be the only exception, where you just get nuclear, NBA Jam style, and you can make it from anywhere on your side of the gym. He's got that. Nobody else has that. And there are some nights, and we've seen them already, where he can pretty much single-handedly bail you out or keep you in games. You don't want to waste that. You got to use it. So that, I think, is a big priority tonight. Figure out whatever the rotation needs to be to find those minutes, and not just fourth quarter minutes. Don't plug him in the fourth quarter and expect that he's going to be able to come in and fire up a bunch of threes. Some, like, a little rotation, you know, some minutes of consistency. I think that would really help to get him in the right spot. I think it would even out some of the rough edges in this rotation. And, you know, it's not going to solve everything, unlike a lot of folks think. Troy Daniels is not the solution to everything, but he is a solution to some problems, and that is a start. Thanks so much for joining me here on Locked On Grizzlies. As always, you can check me out 7 to 10, Wolo and Peter in the morning, Real Sports Talk, Sports 56877 FM. Check out Numbers Game in the commercial appeal, and you can check us out on Facebook as well. Search for Locked On Grizzlies, or go to facebook.com/LockedOnGrizzlies. For those of you, of course, that are big fans of the podcast, let me tell you something. This is a great spot for your company. If you want to reach men between the ages of 18 and 54, this is the place for your audiences. And here's something to consider. Recent surveys have shown that podcast listeners are 65% more willing to think seriously about purchasing products they learned about from podcasts. 60%, given equal price and quality, prefer to purchase from companies that advertise on their favorite podcasts. Our rates are very reasonable. Please shoot me an email, peter@peteredmiston.com. Shoot me a tweet @peteredmiston or a direct message, something like that. We can get all the information out to you. I'd love to have you on the podcast, become part of our family, and reach all those great folks out there that are listening. Thank you so much. You have been Locked On Grizzlies.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily podcast on the Memphis Grizzlies, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.